Good afternoon. This is Senator Olson calling the Community and Regional Affairs Committee together. Today we have Senator Menard, Senator Wagner, and myself, Senator Olson. I'd like to go ahead and welcome everybody to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. This is being televised and recorded, so please turn off all your cell phones. We have two items on the agenda today, the overview of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development by Commissioner Designee Susan Bell, as well as a presentation by the Denali Commission on Sustainable Rural Communities. We don't have a lot of legislation waiting for us in this committee, so these topics will be an overview and we'll continue on from there. With that, we'd go ahead and like to invite Commissioner Bell to come on up and identify yourself for the record and give us your presentation, please.
I'm Susan Bell. Thank you for the opportunity to address the group. I'm a commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. I know I'm sharing this this meeting with Denali Commission, and I do intend to keep my comments fairly brief. There's a handout of the PowerPoint presentation, and we were just looking to see if we could project it. If not, we can just work quickly from the PowerPoint. And for audience members, I know that there's still some additional copies on the table. Okay, thank you. The mission of the Department of Commerce is to promote a healthy economy, strong communities, and protect consumers in Alaska. Just for those of you that would like to flip through, I'll note where I am in the slide, and again, I will move quickly because you do have written material. I'm on slide two, where there's an organizational chart showing the six corporate entities that are housed within the department, including Alaska Aerospace, Alaska Energy Authority, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, Regulatory Commission of Alaska and Serve Alaska, as well as our core divisions, which are listed across the bottom, including Banking and Securities, Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, Division of Community and Regional Affairs, Division of Economic Development, and Division of Insurance. Through working together, we have, switching to slide three, we have 538 employees, and our offices are located in the three largest communities of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, as well as our western and northwestern regional hubs of Kotzebue, Nome, Dillingham, and Bethel, through Alaska Aerospace Corporation. We also operate out of Kodiak, and our Division of Economic Development staff operate the Public Lands Information Center in Togue. So again, throughout the state, we're in a number of locations. Also, ASME has offices located in Juneau and in Seattle. So again, on slide three, it indicates the number of the locations that we have. Slide four just briefly illustrates that by looking at our four priority areas of economic growth, sustainable energy, strong communities, and consumer protection, it shows our FY12 budget request of $204 million broken out by these four core areas. Moving to slide five, I want to add a little more detail into which entities are grouped into these areas. Within our economic development, we have Division of Economic Development, Aerospace, ADA, and ASME. Together, they coordinate, develop, and promote programs for sustainable economic growth. In sustainable energy, those programs are executed by Alaska Energy Authority, and we're focused on development of sustainable energy systems and reducing the cost of energy, particularly in rural Alaska. Slide six, strong communities, predominantly Community and Regional Affairs Division, and the small corporate agency of Serve Alaska, which is the AmeriCorps VISTA program. Through Community and Regional Affairs, we assist communities with achieving maximum local self-governance and again, through Serve Alaska, fostering volunteerism.
Okay, if you just want to hang on for a second, we'd like to record to note that Senator Ellis has joined us. Welcome, Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Continue, please. And maybe at a little slower rate.
Sure. I was wanting to be very high level and respectful of my co-presenters, Denali Commission. So I'll take the energy notch down a notch, take the speed down three notches. So, okay. Thank you. In the inter-consumer protection entities, we have four regulatory entities, including the Division of Banking and Securities, Division of Insurance, Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Together, they're working to license, regulate, and enforce consumer protection and provide a stable business climate. I'd like to touch just briefly on our economic development programs. We recently created the Division of Economic Development by merging the Division of Investments and Office of Economic Development. The main point that I'd like to make is that through this, as we move forward, we're working on strengthening and realigning our financing programs, our research, our business and technical assistance, and our outreach and coordination. Oh, thank you. I'll continue. A number of the programs that we offer in the Division of Economic Development include our small business loan funds. We have a dozen programs in our financing sector. Thank you, John. This, I believe, is our different presentation. Through our financing section, we have 268 loans with a total of $20.3 million. Again, looking at our strengthening and realignment, part of what we're looking forward to is being able to offer our information about our financing programs, not only from Juneau, which is the vast majority of our financing staff are located, but Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks, giving us greater outreach throughout the state, as well as better interaction with the business community. Briefly touching on some of our other programs includes licensing of the Made in Alaska logo, marketing products that are made in Alaska, the Alaska Film Office, which has had significant recognition. On page 8, we highlight some of the elements of our tourism program, which include managing the Qualified Trade Association contract with Alaska Travel Industry Association. We also have staff that are focused on product development, training, and, again, our coordination with the industry and our market research, being able to provide information to communities and policymakers like the Alaska Visitor Statistics Program, which helps quantify not only the number of visitors, but their spending, the total economic impact, where they travel to, and their activities. It helps communities, land planners, and private business. We also work with the minerals industry, forestry, seafood, agriculture, transportation, and again, pulling across different disciplines within the department and other agencies. A few other small programs that I'll just touch on include we work with the ARDRs, the Regional Economic Development Corporations. Grant money is passed through our department to them, and we work on collaborative training, reporting, and just helping have more of a statewide approach to economic development. On page 9, slide 9, is a few bullets about three of the other entities that are housed within our economic development program area, including the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, which had a very successful launch in November from the Kodiak Launch Complex, with another launch planned in May, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, and the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute.
Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for general information, just less than an hour, we moved the Alaska Aerospace Corporation out of your department into, as an executive order that we dealt with, into Veterans of Military Affairs. So that's just real new news. So you no longer will have that in your department, correct?
And Through the chair, Senator Menard, we understand that the House and the Senate each have up to a 60-day window in order to indicate that they do not concur with the executive order. So for this period, we'll still continue providing the administrative services and interacting with them. But I know the House will have an opportunity to take action or not take action as well.
If it does go forward, is that a blessing or a... or otherwise.
Just as a heads up for the committee here, it did pass unanimously out of our committee.
Okay. Chair, well, Olson, part of what we recognize is that the clients are predominantly military, and we think that by being located in the Veterans and Military Affairs, they'll have greater access to opportunities for, you know, key contacts, sustainability funding, and launches. And so, again, we it was a good, rigorous discussion last hour. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Moving to slide 10, and again, I recognize this is a kind of a quick overview. The sustainable energy programs are executed by the Alaska Energy Authority, and today there was the announcement of Sarah Fisher Goad as our new executive director. And I know Sarah's in Juneau this week, and I think it would be an opportunity for people to talk to her one-on-one and to share their ideas. Sarah's been, many of you may know her from her work in the legislature. She's also been within the authority for much of the last decade. So again, that's breaking news that was announced earlier today.
Good choice.
I'll pass that on. Thank you. In the last year, AEA completed the Energy Pathway document in July. Part of what that helps to do is set up the state and the communities within the state for understanding more about the energy resources they have and a sense of what it would take in terms of investment and return on developing, helping achieve our statewide goals. AEA has a number of programs that help help strengthen the energy utilities throughout the state and reduce the costs. I just, again, on the slide on page 10, a few brief mentions of some of the core programs, including renewable energy development, technical assistance, bulk fuel facility upgrade and loan programs. 52 loans were offered through the bulk fuel revolving loan program this last year. One area that I know that rural power system upgrades, there were several that were completed this last year. The Renewable Energy Fund grant is an area I know of great interest. At this point, $150 million for 133 projects has been authorized, and AEA is working on getting that money out into the communities, out on the street. From a training standpoint, more than 50 rural residents were trained to manage and operate the rural infrastructure. AEA also manages the Power Cost Equalization Program. Nearly $32 million was distributed last year. And particularly as we head into this session, there's legislation focused on positioning AEA so that it has its own employees and a greater separation from Alaska, from ADA. Currently they're co-located, which we anticipate having them continue to be co-located, but administratively they're, all of the employees are ADA employees. And the idea is to have them be positioned to go forward while they own projects like Bradley Lake, have them be positioned to own Susitna or other projects of significance. So just making sure that we have the right structure and the right people in order to help address our very critical energy needs.
Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just for clarification, we're on round four of this renewable energy. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I believe that's correct.
And the governor put in his December 15th budget $20 million. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, he put $25 million in, and I know there's been interest in that amongst the legislature. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to turn to slide 11 and talk about
Senator Ellis.
On that point, the commissioner is right. There is interest, I perceive interest in the legislature, because it's supposed to be $50 million a year for 5 years to get to our goal of $250 million. And at $25 million a year, we won't reach our goal. So that was the conversation between Senator Hoffman and Governor Parnell. So, yeah, lots of legislative interest to achieve our goal and to have a budget that reflects that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, do you have any insight into that that you'd share with the committee here as what kind of progress we're making to try and get to the goal in 5 years of $250 million?
At this point, I'd have to work with AEA to follow up, because what I had understood was that $100 million had been distributed the first year, and then the subsequent round two and round three grants were $25 million. But again, as I've talked individually and in a committee forum, I know, especially to meet our statewide energy goals that were articulated last year, there is interest in looking at that number and making sure it's the right fit.
Okay. Any further questions on that point? Senator Menard.
Just for maybe an information piece, part of the problem is some of the monies haven't all been spent, even though they've been awarded to the grantees, because maybe maps were missed, so they're pulled off temporarily. So in just defense of the governor, I believe that he looked that some of those projects have been stopped. And so there's additional money there, too. And we don't know if they're going to, they have to do their due diligence to get everything into us that so they can go forward so we can release the funds too in a correct way. So I think that's the stopgap there.
And Commissioner, I'm not asking you to go ahead and defend the governor. I'm just asking if you had any insight into that.
Well, through the chair, thank you, Senator Menard, for explaining that. And I'm again, with awarding the $150 million, I believe that it's a third of the money, between a third and a half, that's actually implemented, because there is a process in a grant cycle. So thank you for those additional comments. Turning to slide 11, Community and Regional Affairs, another announcement that was made earlier today, and I'm very pleased to be able to share it here as well, is that Scott Ruby, who's been with Community and Regional Affairs now for 26 years, has moved from the operations manager position to the director of Community and Regional Affairs. He's served in a number of positions in his 26 years, including local government specialist, supervisor of the LGS and the RUBA staff, the Rural Utility Business Advisory Program. He's been in land management, and again, as operations manager for the past several years, he's been engaged in has the breadth of the organization and a definite commitment to implementing our programs and going forward. So I'm very pleased with that continuity and what it signals to the staff, to our communities, and to the public as a whole. We have a number of longtime employees in Community and Regional Affairs. Our local government assistant staff, I had noted when we were talking about where we're located throughout the state, is in seven locations in Alaska and provides day-to-day interaction with local governments on a wide array of things, including their basic accounting services, elections, understanding code, and just functioning in a sustainable and an efficient manner, and just understanding the responsibilities. Local government assistant staff also provide training to elected officials, to planning commission members. And the point I want to make is that it's important that we recognize that there's always turnover in these positions, and that this is an ongoing need. We're looking for ways where we can utilize tools like online training and increased efficiencies, but it is an ongoing need. I mentioned the Rural Utility Business Advisory Program. We have 167 communities that are involved with that, and again, looking at the sustainability and continuing operations. We're fortunate, earlier Joellen Hanrahan, our Director of Administrative Services, had joined me at the table. She was part of the creation of that program, and again, looking out at what role the state of Alaska can play in ensuring sustainability at the community level. Our grant staff is very active. It was a very robust capital budget last year with $1.2 billion in grants. And also, they're active with distribution of funds like PILT, payment of lieu of taxes, national forest receipts, the state fisheries business tax and landings tax, and community revenue sharing. So, again, an important connection with grant administration and financial reporting and distribution at the community level. We're also engaged in land management and planning. State assessor, we've got one position based in Anchorage, state assessor working with communities of all sizes throughout the state. Our community publications include things like the community database that's used extensively by people throughout the state, Lean Watch. Our fuel report was something that, with more than 850 calls and contacts to communities, we were making sure that we were looking out for communities that hadn't, just ensuring that they had fuel in place and making sure we understood which ones that, because of their full fuel storage capacity, we may need to monitor through the course of this winter. So, again, a lot of day-to-day contact, a lot of reporting that information internally and to other agencies. Again, there's not a bullet for every activity that we do, but just hit some of the bigger ones. Our local boundary commission, DCRA staff supports them as well. And we have the Bulkfield Bridge Loan, where our goal with that, I had mentioned under AEA, they have a Bulkfield loan program, revolving loan program. We work with the communities that that are not eligible for that and help try to get them back to a level of sustainability that they are eligible. And we've had, I believe this last year, it was 7 communities that moved back from one category to the other. So that technical assistance, again, helps people be more viable. On page 12, just wanted to note some of the things that are continuing challenges and something we think about in the division and at the department level, increased operating costs, staff turnover, potential for reduced federal funding, something you're well aware of, lack of infrastructure in some areas of the state, high cost of doing business, and something that particularly I know Bob Pickett, chairman from RCA, and I have talked about this, and he shared his concerns, the vulnerability that we have from the state federal investment in water, electric, fuel utilities. We have significant investment. They're key elements for making sure that our communities can their viability, and we may need to be looking at regional strategies to ensure their success. So again, there's an urgency to the situation. It's interrelated. When I talked briefly about our energy programs, and we think about the cost of doing business and community viability and economic development, ultimately, while we're housed in one department, we address them separately by divisions. We're all working towards the same goals. So, on page 13, yes,
I'm just giving you a nice look.
No. Okay. They're smiling. It's suspicious. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you. On page 13, I wanted to note that we are well underway with implementing several new local government specialist positions. We were able to realign internal resources and get support from the legislature last year for additional positions. That resulted, again, in us being able, the combination of the two, us being able to add staff in Kotzebue, Nome, Bethel, and a Juneau position. And so it's important working from these hub locations to be able to provide, be very responsive in that location and the smaller communities surrounding them. We are asking the legislature in our...
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in your beginning of your presentation, you said you had 538 employees, I believe. Is that correct? And so with these new positions, what are you looking at as far as growing your department? Because I'm always interested in that.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, the positions were added in the last legislative session, and they were just several new positions. We have, so we're not requesting any new positions in FY12, and our Community and Regional Affairs Division is approximately 64 positions.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Continue, please.
On a related note, last year we did have one-time funding for land management planning. We have an individual that's, again, one of the long-time employees that's been in the department. That's Keith Yost, particularly working on land planning and transfer, working with the ANCSA corporations on the transfer of title and land to communities. We still have more than 50 communities that need to be addressed. It was previously a much more robust section, has been down to one person again last year. We had one-time funding for a position, and that is in our request for FY12 to continue that. We want to be sure that that's an important thing in terms of you have to have clear title in a community if you want to develop infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It relates to economic development and community sustainability. So it ties into Senator Menard's question. Serve Alaska, I briefly noted in the introductory slides that Serve Alaska, which is a small organization for employees, it coordinates our AmeriCorps VISTA program with communities and nonprofit organizations around the state. They work hand in hand with Community Regional Affairs, and I just wanted to acknowledge more than 300,000 volunteer hours last year through the program in core areas of education, health, public safety, and environment. I'll close quickly with a brief description of our consumer protection entities, banking and securities, licensed charters, and examined banks. They have a consumer protection, education and protection program. They also work with issue mortgage licenses. There were more than 200 mortgage licenses issued last year. Our Division of Insurance, led by Linda Hall, a very familiar face in these hallways. I will note that the smile from Senator Wagner was complimentary.
Yes.
I'll presume that. I can't note it. Division of Insurance ensures the financial solvency of insurance carriers throughout the state. They also license and ensure compliance, have a consumer education and protection arm in criminal investigations. Last year, there were more than 300 consumer complaints. It resulted in more than $200,000 additional dollars going to Alaska consumers from the consumer protection element. There were also 7 criminal convictions, of which 2 resulted in jail sentences. So again, division that takes their mission very seriously and is engaged in understanding not only our current statutes, but has been working closely with the governor's office, health and social services, and the legislature, just understanding where national health care is and what implications that has for the state. So I just want to recognize their work in that as well, in addition to their daily responsibilities. On slide 15, there's a brief mention of corporations, business, and professional licensing. We administer 40 professional licensing programs. Of that, 20 are board-supported, 20 are supported by division staff. Again, similar to our other consumer protection elements, we have a consumer outreach and complaint investigation arm. We also issue business license, register corporations and trademarks. And there's 2 points I just want to make on this. One of them is we are increasingly working to be as efficient and responsive to consumer and business interactions as possible. And Division Director Don Haberger was recognized in this last week by the legislature and in the newspaper just for his work. That work has been ongoing for more than a year with the support of our administrative services team and our staff. And again, we're just looking for how we can be a partner and not an impediment. So corporations, business, and professional licensing is our largest division within the department at approximately 80 employees. Regulatory Commission of Alaska,
I'm sorry, Senator Wagner.
Commissioner, give me an example of your consumer outreach and complaint investigation, an example of a case.
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, we get calls and emails and letters about the various professions that are regulated. So, you know, that can range from medical doctors, veterinarians, architects, engineers. They might be concerned about someone operating without a license or and I do have some metrics on that to give you a sense of the volume. I don't know if I can think of a specific example, but I know we had more than 700 complaints last year that after the initial look, 556 were turned into cases that warranted a little more investigation. We go back to those boards. I mentioned the 20 of the 40 licensing programs. We have boards that sit in a quasi-judicial role, and the kinds of disciplinary actions they might make might be a fine if somebody's not compliant with their licensing, compliant with Alaska statute. It might be a fine, it might be additional education, or it might be kind of monitoring and auditing to ensure that they're in compliance.
You're dealing mainly with people or businesses that are licensed through you on a professional basis. You're not being a consumer protection advocate.
Through the chair,
as we would see in the world of retail business.
But through the chair, Senator Wagner, yes, it's more directed towards our professional licensing. If people come to us with more broader questions, we redirect them to more Better Business View or Bureau or the Attorney General or other resources for broad consumer protection.
Okay, thank you.
Continue.
Regulatory Commission of Alaska regulates public utilities and pipeline carriers. There's monitoring now 598 active certificates. That includes wastewater systems, electric, natural gas, telecommunication, and pipelines. Wanted to note something that's in the bottom bullet there on page 15, which is RCA is preparing for concurrent hearings with FERC on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. That's a very significant element of their workload that's coming. They also work closely with Alaska Energy Authority in establishing PCE rates, power cost equalization. The money is distributed by AEA. And as I noted when I was talking about community viability and sustainability, the state as a whole is definitely facing significant energy issues and viability of our utilities and rural utilities. So again, this is where, as a department, some of our entities, I think, are collaborating and thinking about where we need to be going in the future. So it's a very diverse and very interesting department. The last couple of slides just show our budget request for FY12 of $204 million, giving a sense of what is within those corporate agencies versus our core agencies. On slide 17, it shows our budget request by line item. On slide 18, you can see a comparison from funds by fund source for the current fiscal year and our request. And the concluding statement on page 19 is just, I could recap it to say that we're very committed to our mission, really excited about working intra-departmentally as well as with other departments, and I'm pleased to have this opportunity to address you and to serve the state. Thank you.
Do you have any questions of the commissioner by members of the committee?
No, just a compliment. I'm just very impressed with your professionalism, and I thank you for this presentation.
Someone else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to compliment Dave Worrell and at the film office for his good work there, making that program a success. There's more work to be done, and hope to help you with that in the future. And also the hiring by you and the governor of Robbie Graham in your department. I think she's a real asset to the state, and appreciate her good work.
As I look through this presentation, I think you've done an excellent job of getting us there. And I've asked you this question privately. I was wondering, have you had any thoughts to go ahead and give us an idea on what your vision you have for the department as you go through, now that you're in a new administration, a new fresh face, somebody's been learning the ropes, and certainly people that have been entrenched that may have difficulty finding a new way, but you are like a breath of fresh air. It's coming into here with some pretty monumental issues that are looming on the horizon, mainly having to do with things like energy. We're looking at a proposal that the Susitna Dam there is going to be starting out with somewhere around $65 million, and then it may have a price tag of around $5 billion. And that's just one aspect of it. You see a much broader picture. You were obviously tapped on the shoulder because you had a vision out there that maybe somebody else didn't, and I was just wondering if you could share that with us.
I appreciate the compliment and the opportunity to address that. It could be that because I speak fast and have a lot of energy, I can get more done in the same amount of time as anybody else. I do think that there is so much more opportunity within our division or within our department and to work across different departments to collaborate, to share information, to break down silos. I think that this is, it's always a very hopeful and exciting time at the beginning of a new administration as the team is coming together. I also, I think having energy and having enthusiasm and sort of almost an impatience pushing people, it helps. We have many, many talented people in our department and throughout state government, and I think it also takes a sense of listening, understanding where people have had ideas that maybe weren't pursued or weren't entertained. So I think it's a I see so much more potential for collaboration, and there's no there is a sense of urgency. I spent time through the course of this last 30-40 minutes talking about our energy issues, which you amplified, but when we think about again the future of our state, our economic development and our community vitality, we need to take action now. We have to have a longer vision. So we're working in small and large ways within our department and with other departments to try to identify those areas. Thank you.
The other thing, as I look through the flow sheet here, I noticed that there were at least used to be two deputy commissioners. One was in into emphasizing economic development, the other was focused on rural development. I noticed under your oversight, there's going to be just one commissioner. Can you just kind of elaborate on what your thoughts and ideas were going that realm?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Olson. I know that even in the short time that I've been around state government, the department had Mike Black serving as deputy commissioner with Mike Black and Mark Davis was working focused on legacy and economic development initiative. And so I've seen even in a short amount of time how the department was realigned from having someone who was serving as a right hand to Commissioner Noddy, focused on rural Alaska, as you said, but the economic development functions were kind of embodied in a single individual. Just over a year ago, Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer joined the department. And again, it was realigned where Mr. Thayer had five of the divisions under him. Mr. Black, as Deputy Commissioner, was focused on community and regional affairs. And again, there's probably many iterations before that. I knew coming in that I wanted to be sure that we weren't artificially breaking the department. I also early, I put it under advisement for a while. Initially, I thought about what the best structure was. We had made that recent change to reduce our number of divisions by one, which was combining Division of Investments and the Office of Economic Development into a single division. We also knew late summer, early fall, working with Aerospace and Community and Regional Affairs about the conversation of the potential move, which now it was introduced by executive order, of moving a corporate agency out of the department. So I'm feeling comfortable with again, it's over 500 employees, mm-hmm. about half of them being in the core agencies, that with a deputy commissioner and myself, because we're both engaged, I'm here in Juneau, Deputy Commissioner Thayer's in Anchorage, that we are able to address the day-to-day issues in the department. So, and if I find that our structure, that I was short-sighted, I wouldn't hesitate to rethink it. But again, part of it is a reduction, but also the other piece of a reduction in size and responsibility. The other piece, I think, is the engagement. And both of us are very engaged with each of the divisions and each of the directors in our activities.
Another question I have is, I noticed that a number of places that we have are all in Alaska except for one in Seattle. And what's the reason that we have an office? Well, first of all, how many people are in Seattle? And what is the reason that we have a Seattle office dealing with rural development in Alaska?
Thank you, Senator Olson. The Seattle office is part of the ASME operation, Alaska Seafood Marketing, and so being close to the fish processors, being close to our market, being close to our is a part of that. And I know that the executive director and many of the key personnel are based here in Juneau, and they're very accessible. But that's it's looking at alignment with the product, the market, and the distribution system.
On slide 7, you talk about financing, and a number of 268 loans are put out there, $23 million. What segment of society are you hitting that are not, or how do I say that to the bankers that you're not competing with the banks that are out there that are trying to get a return on their investment, that are trying to go ahead and allow for people that have savings accounts to get an interest? How do you answer that? Or is there a segment of society that is ill-served by the bank? Since your background is banking, obviously.
Thank you. Thank you again for the question, Chairman Olson. The loan portfolio that we have, most of our activity is in our commercial, most of the portfolio's value is in commercial fishing programs. And part of that is that when you look at things like quota, when you look at some of the things in the commercial fishing industry, is there a public need because of the high risk, because there needs to be more patient capital? Is it because that the collateral is non-traditional? So we also have a number of other programs that are underutilized, including our Capstone Aviation. That's something that I'd like us, as we increase awareness, as technology changes and makes it more affordable, that we have better utilization of the Capstone Aviation program. We have a rural development, RDIF, Rural Development Investment Fund, and SBED, Small Business Economic Development Program, that I think that we could and should be having more activity in those loan funds as well. So again, back to when the state looks at what Is there a public purpose? Is there a reason that we're stepping into this financing? It's typically because it's something that it's either the loan size or something where it doesn't fit into a traditional bank view. We have spent time last year as the microloan bill was introduced. We spent time talking with the bank association in the state and individual bankers. This year again, as we came back with a financing package that was just introduced by the governor, including reintroduction of the microloan, AmeriCulture program, and then something that we think will help bring, it's a charter commercial charter fishing quota loan, will help us retain Alaska ownership of these of the charter fishing businesses. And we think that all of these things, from having vetted them with our Economic Advisory Council, vetted them with the banking community, and also with CFAB, are fitting a particular niche that's non-traditional. So I think your question's important, and we need to know where the state role begins to, where we have an appropriate role, and when we bump up against something that really is the purview of the private sector.
And how many of these loans are in default or are behind in the payments?
Chairman Olson, that's something I'd have to follow up. I know that our revolving loan programs are healthy, but I'd like to follow up specifically rather than taking a stab at that question.
Sure. And the last one has to do with on slide 11. You're talking about the bulk fuel bridge loan program. Obviously, there are those communities that are in trouble out there, have had a record that's less than honorable. What is that number doing, and how successful has this program been in trying to resolve some of those energy issues, especially as we see the price of oil starting to climb and start to climb fairly quickly, especially if things in Egypt start to go, places in the Middle East start to go bad? What kind of provisions are there that I can tell the communities out there? There is a safety net for you, and we have the ability to go ahead and get you some money so that you won't run out of oil next winter and have to fly it in with some disaster declaration.
Again, thanks for the opportunity to address that, Chairman Olson. The under Alaska Energy Authority, I'd mentioned the Bulk Fuel Revolving Loan Fund, and this Bulk Fuel Bridge Loan Fund is the safety net. I would need to follow up again, in terms of the success rate and default rate, but there is a point where the state does step in and ensure that fuel does get to the communities. I had previously noted that seven communities recently had come from this safety net situation back over to the more traditional loan, but I'd be happy to follow up with some more detail to answer your question fully.
The last question related to that is the Bulk Fuel Revolving Loan Fund. Is it been set at an amount, and has it been at that amount for the last 5 years since I've been in the legislature after it was increased? Are you in favor of increasing that amount so that communities that have more electricity need and the ability and sometimes lesser ability to go in and meet that need with cash up front, are you in favor of increasing that amount? Or would you be in favor of increasing that amount?
So just to clarify, was that increasing the interest amount on the loan, or I'm sorry, I just wanted you to repeat the key part of the question.
Increasing the cap of the loan that any community can take out to make sure that they can borrow enough money to fill their bulk tanks next summer before the barge leaves and doesn't come back for another until the next season.
Thank you, Senator, for that question. I think on that specific question, I would want to talk to our Community and Regional Affairs and AEA staff, because it seems like it's a combination of what's the fuel storage capacity, what's the financial condition of the community, and what programs do we have, like the Revolving Loan Fund and the Bridge Loan Fund. So I think that deserves a thoughtful answer, and I'd like to talk with them.
Any further questions of the Commissioner?
I just like to ask a question. As we sit around this table in different committees, not just this particular committee, the word sustainability constantly comes up. In viewing sustainability, I view it in terms of participatory, long-term, meaning 5 to 10 years, and integrated. By that I mean what other parts of the public sector are involved. You know, we recently just dealt with the P3 public partnership public-private partnership with the Kabata now that we're dealing with. Is there other ways that you have any items or want to speak to that you put into part of the equation when you are dealing with that word sustainability?
And through the chair, Senator Menard, I think it's important when we think about sustainability that we recognize there needs to be there's infrastructure, there's the technical capability, and there's the business environment opportunity. So when we think about infrastructure, that cuts across, you know, Department of Transportation, Regulatory Commission. There's physical our communication system. We also have Department of Workforce or Department of Labor and Workforce Development training opportunities. And then also the business climate, what's our regulatory and tax environment, what marketing and financing and other economic development opportunities do we have? So when I think across the cabinet or I think across the state government as a whole, they have to be working together. And I think that goes back to a question that Senator Olson had asked a few moments ago in terms of my vision. It just seems like we have programs, we have very good people, and it's making sure that we're working in sync and we're working to a vision. So thanks for the question.
Okay.
Any further questions of the commissioner? If not, thank you very much for an excellent presentation this afternoon.
Wonderful.
Good luck as you continue down the road here. With that, we next have the Denali Commission come on up. Before we get too comfortable, let's go ahead and have a little bit of an at-ease here. Let's go ahead and call the Committee on Regional Affairs meeting, committee meeting back to, back again. And now we have the Denali Commission come on forward to go ahead and present them, present some of the issues that are coming up. And Joel Niemeyer is going to be presenting. Go ahead, identify yourself for the record and continue.
Thank you, sir. My name is Joel Niemeyer. I'm the federal co-chair of the Denali Commission. This is my second year in this post. What I'd like to do is I'd like to, if you indulge me, I'd like to run through quickly in the very first half of the presentation and then get to the last half, which gets to sustainable rural communities, and I believe complements what Commissioner Bell, I mean, Commissioner was talking about earlier. So with that, the Denali Commission was enacted in 1998. It's based upon the Appalachian Regional Commission. There are three regional commissions of note, being Appalachian Regional Commission, Denali Commission, and Delta Regional Authority. There are three additional or three others, but they are smaller. It is an independent federal agency. We do have connections and ties with the Department of Commerce. We also have ties to many other federal agencies that provide funding through to us. We have some general principles. We strive to have a small staff. It was written in the original legislation that we are limited to 5% overhead. Federal OMB has waived that recently, but the intent is still to have a small staff, and that we do not do program management, project management. So we farm out the vast majority of our projects to the state and to other program partners, such as Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and other federal agencies. I think the act, the important part about the act, which I always like to talk about, is that Congress took a leap of faith and said, we're going to invest in seven Alaskans to make a decision of where this funding will be placed. We've had $1 billion in 12 years, and they didn't say, go build this bridge here or go build that clinic there. They said, there's a certain amount of money we're going to give to you for health. You figure out where it goes. So it's an extraordinary form of governance on the federal part to say we're going to trust seven Alaskans. So if you look at the next slide, the $1 billion that we've had, 2,100 projects in 12 years, the vast majority has gone into energy. Health has also a major component in transportation. We have an assortment of other projects, but in the end, we started the energy program from the very beginning. Health started about 2 years in, and transportation has been online for the last five. This slide that shows the funding also shows the sources of funding and how we've peaked at 140 in FY05, FY06, and we've been in decline since. To last year, we were at 58 million. I'm not allowed to speak to the FY11 funding until the president releases it, but there's an element of that we will talk about that is important to the legislature. I spoke earlier that we are modeled after the Appalachia Regional Commission on this slide of the U.S. The Appalachia are those communities or those counties and states in yellow. Delta Regional Authority is the states that are in blue. The important part about this slide is that it shows that these other regional commissions have a large number of U.S. senators and congressmen in support of them, whereas the Denali Commission, being one state, we only have three. We spoke earlier about the partners. We have partners on the federal end, we have partners on the state, and we have partners who are not federal or state but are nonprofits, housing authorities, so on and so forth. This slide, what we did is we, in response to concerns that have been raised in Congress about what has the commission and the state, what has been their partnership, has it been robust enough? And the reason why that was raised is with the other regional commissions, there's legislation that requires those states to contribute, whereas this, the Originating Act, did not have that. So we did analysis the last 5 years. And of the $478 million the commission funded to 899 projects, there was state of Alaska funding of $106 million. Of that $106 million, I don't know how much of it is, but it could be about $10 million came directly to the commission. The rest were projects which we jointly funded, had separate grant agreements to a common project. And they also, this slide, what I really like about this analysis about the partnership between the state and Denali Commission is the project management, the project, the actual project level management the state of Alaska has provided, 412 of the 899, seven different state agencies. So we've developed a relationship over the year. It's a good example of how over 12 years the Denali Commission in their partnerships has developed these broad relationships all across the state with many different agencies, whether they're state or communities, so on and so forth. This next slide about the 4-to-1, it's a important story because what it talks about is the although of that, of the $2.4 billion the state of Alaska has invested in rural Alaska into Denali Commission programs or program areas to our $1. What's important is that it's very complementary. So Commissioner just spoke about some of the energy programs, the for example, the revolving loan fund for bulk fuel. That's part of this $4 billion. So we may be building the tanks, and you guys may be providing the support services to the communities that need to fill those tanks. That's an example. And another example, which I particularly enjoy sharing, is the state provided $300 million for weatherization. The Denali Commission provided $1 million for training to weatherization crews. Largely, these were to regional housing authorities. So we have no claim to the good work the state did, but what we can say is we believe that $300 million went further because the crews were better trained and were be able to work more effective and efficiently. I think that's a very good example about how the commission and the state can complement one another. I spoke about our programs. There's four main infrastructure or significant programs of note. We've had many others over the years, but these four have been pretty much from the very beginning. We've been working on them. Or they're significant. We've got energy, health, transportation, and training. We list the fifth, governmental coordination. I believe that's the magic. That's the bow on top of everything. That is this collaboration across federal and state agencies with municipalities, tribes, and nonprofits. And I think that is where the commission can have its most important impact in development of rural Alaska. Some quick slides about the work we do. The energy program, you see a slide of bulk fuel, which has been the mainstay of the energy program. We've been doing some power projects, power generation, so we're talking about generators. It's important to note in rural Alaska, diesel is always going to be there. It's just always going to be there. Now, we may be able to provide diesel generation that's more effective and efficient. We may provide some other alternatives that lower the use of diesel, but we're just going to need diesel. So the windmill turbines are an example of reducing the load for diesel power, but we're still going to need those systems in place. Health, this is a primary care clinic. The vast majority of the work that we've done in health is in primary care, although we have done additional work in senior assisted living, domestic violence, in hospitals, so on and so forth. A slide of the transportation program. The important, for me, there's two parts of the transportation program. One is surface roads, and the other is waterfront ports and harbors. And if there's any, allow me to share with you that the first 5 years of the Denali Commission, I was there. I was the sixth employee. And so I got to see us ramp up. And when I left, the transportation program was just coming in the fore. So I really didn't know much about the transportation program until I returned. So this year I've been able to pay close attention to this program. And what I observe and what I see is there's a wonderful opportunity for the state, for the feds, for others to work in a robust way in ports and harbors and waterfront projects. As I see it, there's a good number of agencies and folks working on road improvements, but there's not as much opportunity currently for waterfront. And I think that's something that certainly the state could be talking with our delegation about, and we can try to build inroads in that area. Training program, what we try to do is train folks in rural settings to work on the projects we fund. So sometimes we're successful at that, sometimes we just fund training programs that that in eventuality folks will lead to paying jobs. There are some significant points that I wanted to share that I have been sharing with the legislature in individual meetings, and this slide speaks to that. First off, Governor Parnell last year put $3 million in his capital budget for the Denali Commission. And it was $3 million without specifically saying it's for this earmark or for this project or for that. It was an investment on those seven Alaskans, those seven Alaskans who make choices. And we're very appreciative of that. What we are here to report is that about half of this money is going to energy projects, and the other half will go to waterfront projects. Now, in the transportation program, we recently reviewed 41 waterfront projects. It'll fund about $16 million, of which the state will be providing about this $1.5 million, $1.4 million of match through this $3 million. And then there's an existing $500,000 left over from a very initial investment the state gave us of $5 million when the transportation program was developed. In our health program, we are proposing through partnerships with the Department of Health and Social Services and Mental Health Trust Authority that the legislature consider changing existing appropriations for four projects, and we'll speak about that in a bit. In the energy program, I wanted to highlight changes in recent federal legislation that will require cost-share match and what that means in the energy program, and then we'll talk about sustainable rural communities. So on the $3 million partnership grant, as you can see, seven projects are for power generation. The commissioners, when they decided what they wanted to fund with the $3 million, they said We want projects which are construction-ready that will move forward so we can demonstrate to the legislature that we're good stewards of the state funds. I'll report to you on these seven. These are proposed by Alaska Energy Authority. In the final development of the projects, you know, through final design completion, so on and so forth, we realize that they are short a few dollars, and so that's projects are now whole, and they can move forward to construction this year. Now, with the state match for transportation, we're identifying up to 17 communities for what are called mooring points. And let me speak briefly about that. If you look at this photo of Chivac mooring, you will see in the upper left-hand corner a chain. And what that means is that underneath that chain is a pile, a steel pile that's been driven. And so a barge, and you can see a river barge there, can pull up on and ground itself on the riverbank and tie off to the chain and turn off the tug. And that's important because the tug doesn't operate, doesn't expend fuel, but also doesn't create shoaling problems. And if you have shoaling problems after the barge leaves, you could have problems with boaters coming in and hitting that and, you know, spilling. So these have proven very popular with the barge industry. They're very pleased with it. And what we're proposing is that up to 17 communities we funded this year and next with the state money to complete the match requirements, federal match requirements. So in the transportation program, the final analysis is that we'll have about 16 plus million for waterfront. We have enough match for those, both from the state and from program partners, mainly, let's say, the communities or the municipalities. With the road program, we have 31 projects that we have yet to score. We'll be scoring those the first week of March. Our estimate at this point is that we are about $500,000 short of cost-share match. So what we're presenting this week is There is a need for cost-share match, whether it comes from the communities or whether it comes to the state of Alaska, so that we can move to leveraging the $14 million in road money. That leads to the health program. Again, we're looking at a suite of four behavioral health projects. The story behind this is that we have historically been receiving a significant amount of health money from Health Resources and Services Administration, a federal agency, and as that diminished, it was deliberate action by the commission to start putting what remaining money we had to primary care. So we had a little bit of money left over in behavioral health, and what we said, how could we best leverage this behavioral health money that's left over, and we won't have any more, how can we best leverage it and move forward? And the Health Steering Committee and others have provided, in partnership with the Department and Mental Health Trust, a recommendation of these four projects. We've provided those recommendations to OMB Director Karen Rayfield, and I suspect that our program partners will be coming to the legislature asking for this legislative change. Please note that there is no additional state funding required, just as some legislative change. The energy program is, let me share with you the changes that have occurred in federal legislation that are pending that lead to me talking about this point. Last year around this time, federal OMB insisted that in the write-up of the president's budget that there would be a cost-share match that made us look more like the other regional commissions, which have a required cost-share match of those states. We do not have that. We have that. So traditionally, the base budget has gone to energy, and so we've been oftentimes funding energy projects at 100%. With this requirement, we will be looking at energy projects that we fund henceforth out of the base budget, a required match of 20% for economically distressed communities. These are generally your smaller communities such as Tuntutuliak, those communities that are listed for the mooring points. A number of those would be economically distressed. And the non-distressed communities are places like Bethel. At this time, we don't know how much money we're going to get for energy. At this time, we don't know which communities we're going to serve, whether distressed or non-distressed. So we've provided you a range between $4.5 million to $15 million is needed. We will know by March once the continuing resolutions are completed at the federal level, and we'll then come back and say, this is a number we need. I wanted to speak about sustainable rural communities and this document and how I see it will intersect with the way the state is doing business, or shall I say, let me rephrase that, how federal agencies can engage the state in the work that we do in the delivery of federal services projects and programs in rural Alaska. Before I started last January, I was notified that the delegation was interested in looking at this concept of sustainable rural communities, not sustainable projects, but sustainable rural communities. It's a fascinating concept. What does it take to have a sustainable community? And the way they approached it, I thought was fascinating, and it has been very effective in my mind. They said, what are barriers that federal agencies currently have to delivery of federal services? In short, what are those stupid things? What are those regulations that don't make sense? What are those sort of things that prevent efficient delivery of federal service? So we convened our federal partners, our family of federal agencies, and over the course of a number of months, we developed this report, of which we identified some common issues. Some of those findings we had is we should have a lead federal agency on projects. So instead of a community having to work with multiple agencies, maybe we can figure out so that one takes lead and works with that one community. We should have a focus on communities. That seems pretty straightforward. We should engage them. These are all common sense approaches. Commissioner spoke about regionalization. That is also a concept. As dollars become tighter, we may need to look at ways in which we can more efficiently deliver services. So after we published a report, we asked for public input, and we've been receiving public comment both in writing and in meetings. And what we intend on doing is issuing a supplemental report in the next couple months. So the supplemental report will address the findings that the agencies came and refine them. And what we then hope to do is then engage the state we presume through the Governor's Rural Task Force and other opportunities to say, this is what the family of federal agencies think we can work on, that should we, that we could work on and should work on for better delivery of federal services in rural Alaska. And then on those particular issues where it's appropriate, we'll try to engage the appropriate state agencies so that we can work on it in a collaborative fashion. It is this kind of work that I think is the magic of the commission. It's not just, you know, funding the projects. It's this kind of work so that our service and other program service can go farther. The last thing I want to speak to is we are holding what are called listening sessions. What they are about, it's a fundamental three questions. After a decade of being in business and serving rural Alaska, we want to ask the question, what are we doing right? What is it that we're not doing at all that you think we should be doing, and how can we improve? Now, these are important questions because we are going through reauthorization. The authority for the commission lapsed in 2008. The delegation is very interested in reauthorizing the commission. I want to thank senators who are here today, as well as those who aren't, as well as the House for Joint House Resolution 46, recommending reauthorization of the commission. We see this as an opportunity to perhaps find a jewel, something we've missed about what is it we're doing that we could be doing or should be doing, and how can we do it better, so that we can inform the delegation when they provide, you know, when they rewrite the act, they can include those. And so these listening sessions, we've got one in Nome already scheduled, piggybacking on CoORC's annual meeting. We've got one tentatively in Bethel with AVCP Housing Authority. We have one in Anchorage proposed to meet with our program partners. Our program partners are saying, well, we want to talk to you about this as well. And we've got a fourth one tentatively as well. We're looking at in Fairbanks with Tanana Chiefs in mid-March. With that, that's my presentation about the commission. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Do you have any questions by members of the committee? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just say that your reputation precedes you. We have most of us at this table have just wonderful feelings towards the commission and all the good that they've come forth to our state. So with that, I'm as supportive as I guess I can be. And I just noticed here that there was one of the areas that you were targeting. It's Nugent's Ranch, mm-hmm. and I've been, and it's basically a detox center.
Yes.
And it's a very expensive program to run, extremely. I was on the Salvation Army for 20 years, and we had a program, and it just, we'd be lucky if successfully we could get 17 people out of that program a year. But I've watched that very closely in Tim and Mary Anderson. He used to be a mayor, and he's very excellent, as is his wife, at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and of course, it's going to be located out by Point McKinsey, a favorite of mine, area. So, but so I'm very pleased to see that because we've just needed just a little bit more of a push. So thank you for helping the Nugent's Ranch people.
Well, thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it. Just as you all at the commission are listening to Alaska constituents for your efforts, it's probably a time that's it's incumbent on Alaska legislators to listen to what's going on at the federal level. And with budget limitations and a whole new set of politics, well, not new politics in Washington, but just changes going on, the world is changing at the federal level. And I had used the phrase in one of our previous conversations of enhanced partnership or a redefinition that's going on of the relationship between the feds and the state of Alaska in regard to the Denali Commission and your good work. Could you just speak to that a little more of what the forces that are at play in this discussion? And we've been warned before or admonished before to think about the future and to think about the states stepping up and participating more fully in this relationship in terms of dollars, and realizing that there was no requirement of a match for the state of Alaska, unlike these other commissions who have made noises about that very topic. So could you just speak to what's yet to come and what's likely to happen and how we can guide some of that, not to escape our responsibilities, but to embrace our responsibilities and what may be an enhanced partnership with the federal government in the future?
Certainly, Senator Ellis, through the chair. The changing dynamic, let me start with federal OMB. They are supportive of the collaboration work that the Denali Commission does. They understand that there's a certain amount of funding that we must have in order to do that sort of collaboration so that we can have potentially enhanced partnerships both at the local level, regional level, and at the state level. Having said that, they have some concerns about the agency, which they have, you know, aired. We have at the congressional level, we have very strong support with the delegation. Their staff is very supportive. But my finding has been in numerous meetings in D.C. with staffers from other states, less of appreciation for funding that comes to one state. And a common question they ask is, where is the state of Alaska? That is why we undertook the research to be able to quantify what that relationship is. That's why it's important for us now to be able to say state of Alaska is a significant partner in project management, 412 of 899 projects. So it's important for us to generate the data, provide it to the delegation, provide it to the legislature, and share with you how that partnership has been strong. But to get to the question of more enhanced partnership, I think what the expectation will be in D.C. is that we'll move to more intentional investments so that it's not, I don't want to say it's random, but or happenstance that we fund joint projects, but it's that we come together in advance and say, this is our process we're going to use to fund these projects, and then we'll funnel our money in. And we'll figure those details out later. Allow me to share with you an example of this, which I think we'll get to. It could well be an example of the future. It's the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, in which the state provided $2.4 million. We had $3.1 million. In recent conversations with the Alaska Energy Authority, including the new CEO, before she was the new CEO, we spoke about that relationship where the Denali Commission would invest dollar for dollar with the state's 2.4. So there's 4.8 million available for emerging energy technologies. What we did with the 700,000, we are holding it back in abeyance because our money is more flexible than the state's money. And the idea is if something comes out of that, out of the RFP process for emerging energy technology that the state cannot fund, that's not appropriate because of the act, we have the 700,000 that's more flexible that may allow us to say we should fund that project because that's an exciting project that may have an impact. So what I see is there may be opportunities with your funding that we can't employ. We may have opportunities with funding that we can employ that the state can't. And if we talk about it on a program level, project level, we may be able to collaborate so that we get to a really good list of projects that really are impactful. So I think the change will be is that we probably should have conversation earlier.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Niemeyer? Now, one of the questions I have on page or on the funding sources for between the period of years that were there, I don't have the number here in front of me, but I see that the peaks were fiscal year 05 and 06, $140 million or so, and that trajectory has gone down. Has that been the same with the Appalachian as well as the Delta Regional Authority?
Not at all. Theirs have been pretty much flatlined. So as we're seeing a 20-30% annual decrease, mm-hmm. they're seeing a 1-2% decrease or 1-2% bump up. I'll share with you that we have a relationship with Bureau of Public Debt. They provide administrative support services for us, and they represent another 50 federal agencies or departments. And when they've seen this, they've said, we've never seen anything like this. You know, they work with folks, they complain about a decline of, you know, 3% funding, and they take out the slide and they say, you have no reason to complain. What this agency is going through. So, no, this is unique to us.
As the trajectory goes down in a couple of years, there won't be any more money coming in. Is that true? How do we protect ourselves from it?
I believe that that there is a certain point in which the commission continues to add value, whether it's at $140 million or at $58 million. It allows us to do things like this. There's a certain amount of money in which has us out there in the field. Folks see us in play. They see us engaged at the regional, local level, tribal level, and the state level. If we're not out there doing work, then what do we have to add? I don't believe we really have that much to add. So there's a number, there's a point, and I don't know what that is. I know we're not there, and my hope and goal is that we don't get there so that the commission can continue doing work such as this.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, thank you very much for presentation this afternoon.
Thank you.
Anything else to go ahead and do we have a next meeting scheduled? Okay. If not, we'll let your office, the respective offices, know when the next meeting is there. With that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Wonderful.